Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Lucy Pony in Washington.
And I'm Michael Atit, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, March the 9th, 2015.
Talks between the government and rebels ended Friday without an agreement.
It doesn't mean that we have failed, but it means that we are giving ourselves time to go and think over some of the disagreed issues so that when we come back, we would come and continue negotiating.
And two children were kidnapped in Bor town last night.
The rebels, bypassing our forces outside the 5 a.m., abducted two children, one boy and one girl. They wounded a grandmother of the children and wounded one boy who is now his grandmother in Bor teaching hospital.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. It's unclear what the next move will be in the negotiations between South Sudan's government and the rebels. No date for resuming the talks has been set. President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar ended their talks in Addis Ababa on Friday after missing Thursday's deadline to reach an agreement. The spokesperson for UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says the Secretary General is urging both parties to display statesmanship to reach a negotiated settlement, warning them not to escalate the conflict. The Security Council voted unanimously to impose sanctions on both sides if they don't sign an accord. U.S. State Department spokesperson Marie Harf strongly condemned what she called the lack of political leadership in resolving the conflict. She warned that the entire region is affected by the conflict and that the U.S. and its Troika partners will continue working with IGAD and the African Union to end the fighting. After the talks ended on Friday, government spokesperson Michael Makwe and rebel spokesman Diu Mathok expressed optimism. Mathok said IGAD, under the direction of Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn, will continue mediating the talks.
The peace process has not collapsed. The Prime Minister promised that they are going to come up with the mechanism, the new mechanism, has IGAD countries, and we will be informed in order to continue. The gap, it is true that it's still very wide, but we are capable of narrowing and bring peace to our country.
Whenever we come here to come and negotiate and we depart from here, it doesn't mean that we have failed, but it means that we are giving ourselves time to go and think over some of the disagreed issues so that when we come back, we would come and continue negotiating.
That's Information Minister Michael Makwe after peace talks ended on Friday. Before him, we heard from rebel spokesman Theo Mathok. One long-time observer of Sudanese politics say it is not really a surprise that the two sides didn't reach an agreement last week. John Ashworth is an advisor to churches in South Sudan and Sudan on peace and reconciliation. Ashworth says that the two sides are interested in gaining more territory before entering into significant talks.
I don't think there's any surprise in South Sudan that the talks have collapsed. It seems at the moment both parties feel there is still some military advantage to be gained on the battlefield. They're both prepared for fighting as the dry season comes. So I think they're just not ready. Conflicts have to be ripe, I think, to be solved, and this one isn't quite ripe yet. I think both sides realize they will not win the conflict by military means, but I think both sides think they can still gain a more advantageous position.
Now, with the talks having collapsed in Addis, are there any talks going on right now, whether informally or formally, trying to get the two parties together?
Well, there's another process going on, which was taking place in Arusha in Tanzania, which was to try to resolve the conflict within the ruling party, because the flashpoint for this conflict in December 2013 was actually internal party procedure. So I think there may still be some mileage to be gained out of continuing with this Arusha process.
Now, the UN Security Council voted to have a sanctions regime for those who are obstructing peace in South Sudan. And the IGAD has also been threatening the two parties to just sign a peace deal. Do you think the threats or the sanctions would push the two parties to sign a deal?
I doubt very much whether sanctions will have much effect on people. First of all, most of these people are, their money is in East Africa probably more than it's in America or anywhere else. And it'll be interesting to see whether Uganda and Kenya and Ethiopia will be willing or able to enforce a sanctions regime. I think it's also a case that even if the two main protagonists, the two main leaders, if they agree, many of the people who are actually fighting are people in the bush. They're warlords, militia leaders who have their own agendas. And I'm not sure whether sanctions will have much effect on any of those people.
Now, looking at all the issues of disagreement at the talks in Addis, do you think that given more time, these parties could reach a deal?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that the Catholic bishops whom I work with have said very clearly that none of these things are as important as stopping the killing. They have said there is no moral justification for arguing about posts and positions and percentages while people are still killing each other. So I think the first step is that the two sides have to agree to stop the fighting. All of their political aims are on the table now. Everybody knows what everybody is asking for. And the time has come to stop the fighting.
And just following the collapse of the talks, there's been reports of renewed fightings by the two forces. Now, do you think the parties have a will to stop fighting? They've signed a cessation of hostilities agreement a number of times and recommitted to it.
Well, at this moment, it seems they don't, partly because they're still focused on political gain, on posts in the government, on percentages in power. As long as they remain focused on these things, they'll probably see a military advantage to be had by fighting. But I think they need to be told very clearly that you've got to stop fighting first before you can even think about gaining any political advantage.
What do you think of the leaked AU report recommending that neither Kiir nor Machar should be excluded from the transitional government of national unity?
Well, first of all, we don't know whether that is a true report. It's only a leaked report, so we may be commenting on nothing. But assuming that it is what it says it is, I think it's a fine principle. It recognizes that if there are problems in the country, then everybody in leadership had a finger in those problems, whether that be people in the opposition, the armed opposition, the unarmed opposition, or within the government. Not one of them can claim that, you know, the others are the ones who caused the problems. All of them played a role in causing the problems. But I think it's a fine sentiment that will be very difficult to implement. I mean, the reality of life in a fragile state like South Sudan is that you can't just create a complete vacuum. You can't just throw out the entire ruling elite and expect that it will be peaceful. I think there's going to be need to find some sort of compromise.
John Ashworth is a longtime observer of Sudan and South Sudan. He was speaking to me today from Nairobi.
Last week, we told you that a draft of the long-awaited African Union Commission of Inquiry report was leaked. South Sudanese analysts are rejecting much of what leaked report has to say and questioning its legitimacy to comment on the leak. Jock Madud Jock is a founder of the Sud Institute and a professor of the African Studies at Loyola Marymount University in California. He says the mere fact that the report was leaked
makes me very skeptical about its value and its professional presentation. We are told that this is only a small portion of what would have been an entire AU report, which was 400 pages. This one is no more than 60 pages. And I believe that it is a dissenting point or position by one of the members of the commission rather than a report that is agreed to by all the commissioners.
The report makes some contentious recommendations, including that President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar be excluded from the transitional government of the national unity.
In their place, the recommendation is formation of a council made up of three people to oversee the interim period. The recommendation says that they that it would be good to keep the parliament currently in place because parliament was the only institution that did not have any role in the atrocities, and also that it would be the institution that would oversee the transition.
Jock says excluding the leaders of the warring sides from any future government will not help to resolve the conflict.
Removing them simply means removing people, but not removing the underlying causes and all the problems that led to this current an enviable situation in the country. You could remove these two only for another two to step in. So what is needed is not just a removal of individuals, but an overhaul of the system.
Luka Byong is the director of the Center for Peace and Development at the University of Juba. He agrees that excluding Mr. Kiir and Machar from the government will not help to bring the South Sudanese people the peace that they want.
First, you are creating a situation that, okay, you're barring out the two people, you want to get intervention of African Union, UN intervention in South Sudan.
The report was put together after months of investigation. The team that put together it was led by the former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo. Jock says it is very useful in that it charted the crisis in South Sudan from its very beginning. Byong says he thinks that the authorities committed the report will help to end impunity in South Sudan. But both Jock and Byong say it falls down overseas counts. Jock particularly faults the report by naming witness to some of the authorities it highlights.
I see this as a complete setback for the entire business of human rights work, because it will force people to never come forward with information. And it is, even for future investigations into this crisis, will probably cause people to shy away from talking to human rights monitors.
He also takes issues with the report for saying the United States, Norway, and the United Kingdom were responsible for wearing South Sudan's independence.
This, I think, is a gross robbery of the right of the people of South Sudan of the credit for their own independence. They've been fighting for 190 years to get independence, and yet their effort is now taken by this report and given to other countries, countries that a lot of people of South Sudan are very appreciative of what they have done, like the United States and Norway, but not to say that the independence of South Sudan was brought by outsiders.
That was Jock Madud Jock and Luka Byong. Jock was speaking to Karen Zivogol, and Byong was spoken with Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Tens of thousands of South Sudanese have had to leave their farms and stop producing food due to the ongoing conflict. Tribal frictions and adverse weather have also affected farming communities outside the war zones. Zladika Hawk reports that with the two warring parties failing to restore peace, South Sudan is facing a serious humanitarian crisis.
Cattle farms in South Sudan's Lake State look serene in the early morning hours. But villagers say anything can trigger a conflict with neighbors from a hostile tribe. Fighting to avenge a wrong, real or perceived, is part of the culture.
If you just keep quiet, you don't run after your cow and get it back, as if your manhood is being questioned. You are not strong. You are not a strong, Nilotic man. How? Who are you? Because in any community discussion, you will be referred as a coward.
South Sudanese fought an intermittent civil war with Sudan until a peace agreement was reached in 2005, leading to South Sudan's independence in 2011. But two chief leaders of the South have become arch enemies. Their personal conflict has flamed into a full-fledged civil war between the Dinka and Nuer ethnic groups for the past 14 months.
In this pastoralist community, cattle raids have always been there. But to me, they have not been so destructive like our time today. And I may attribute this maybe also to possession of illegal arms. In the past, long ago, they were using spears. And the spears are not so destructive like guns.
Since tradition demands revenge for losing a family member, more and more villagers are getting killed.
It has become very worse. Compared with, because your brother kill, you go and kill another one who is not killing your brother, and another one will just go and kill the one who is not killing his brother. So it's cycling like this. It's increasing.
The northern village of Nayal is somewhat isolated from the war zone and is housing some people displaced by violence. After her eldest child was killed in the civil war, this newer woman fled here with her remaining son.
I suffered a lot and the hunger nearly killed me. My legs were cut up because I'd fall down, start walking again, and then fall down again.
But after recent floods devastated Nile's crops, its isolation is not so advantageous. The community largely depends on airdrops for food aid.
We don't have food. We just go to the water and dig up the lily roots to feed the children.
But for those who have come to Nile for protection, the choice is simple: hunger rather than war. The African Union countries are pushing for a creation of a transitional government in South Sudan to help restore peace. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Bor County officials in Jonglei State say two young children were kidnapped and two others wounded last night in Bor Town. Some officials suspected Murle tribesmen may have been involved, but others think it is the work of rebels in the area. Jacob Achek has more for VOA from Juba.
The South Sudan Democratic Army, or SSDA, which is suspected of carrying out the attacks, used to be run by David Yao Yao, now the head of the Greater Pibor administration. Yao Yao signed a peace agreement with the South Sudan government in May of 2014. Since that time, many observers child abduction stopped in most areas of Bor County. But earlier this year, Bor County Commissioner Mameruk says criminals from Greater Pibor area resumed child abduction and cattle rustling.
The raiders, bypassing our forces outside the 5 a.m. and entering into Bor Town and attack Blong 9. They adopted two children, one boy and one girl. They wounded a grandmother of the children and wounded one boy who is now with his grandmother in Bor teaching hospital. And they are really in critical condition.
He said the abducted children are a 5-year-old girl, Abiarton Malual, and a 3-year-old boy, Malualton Malual. Rook said such crime destabilize communities and damage the peace process between Dinga, Bor and Murle communities. He accused renegade members of SSDA of carrying out last night raid.
I know I can never raid somebody's property. They are very peaceful community in Jonglei State. Like people, we don't have border with them. Here, we don't have any problem with them one day. The only people who are engaging here were always committing atrocities in Bor are Murle people.
Mamer said the Bor County Police Commissioner sent officers to search for the criminal and bring them to justice. And he noted that some local youths followed the abductors as they flew the area. Makiri Choladol, a member of parliament representing Makwach Payam, said similar attacks have occurred in other areas of Bor County. He said if perpetrators do not find children to kidnap, they killed adults and steal cattle.
The insecurity here in Bor Town is one. First is Murle atrocities, and then the Nuer invasion. These atrocities are really known by the state, even by the parliament. But things have changed. At the time the Murle were given their separate administration, they are no longer answerable to the state. They are direct to the presidency. So there is no whereby we go around to go and contact them.
Adol said since 2012, many families deserted their home streets because of increasing attacks and abduction reportedly carried out by Murle. Murle tribesmen have been known in the past to abduct children and raise them as part of their community. Villagers also accuse Murle of selling children in exchange for 50 cows. In 2012, more than 100 abducted women and children were identified during the disarmament process and were taken to the Child Interim Center in Bor for reunification with their loved one in the state. Their abductors were not punished for their crime. There are no laws in South Sudan to arrest and punish those responsible for child abduction. The Jonglei State Police Commissioner did not return call for comment on this story. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek from Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Despite many challenges in the country, some South Sudanese women are becoming successful business owners. That is story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
should countries require national youth service?
If we have that body of uniting people through the youth, which means we shall never be having all the corruption, fighting, the tribalism will all be eliminated through forming that youth service.
Yes, I think so. Youth services allow young people from school to gain experience in community service, which is important throughout their professional life.
No, I don't think so, that all the people should serve in the national service. Well, the reason being, you know, we need to specialize on different sectors pertaining to the country so that the development actually will attain itself from various sectors and for easy what? Sustainability in the country.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. In honor of International Women's Day yesterday, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry penned an opinion piece in which he said, "Every day we all hear about women and girls around the world who are victims of heinous violence." Kerry noted that too often women bear the burden of war. He said everyone must do all they can to stop violence against women and girls wherever and whenever it occurs. But Kerry also highlighted the power of women in the 21st century. On Friday, the State Department honored 10 such women with the International Women of Courage Award, who took to advance peace and gender equality and be agents of change. Kerry says when women and girls have access to education, healthcare, and jobs, their families and communities are more productive and stable. The opposite is true too, he says. When women are excluded and victimized, societies suffer grievously.
To commemorate the Women's Day, we are taking a closer look at what it is like for South Sudanese women to start their own business in a country where the vast majority of women do not have assets to register even their name. Philip Tonaleo met one of women in Juba who has overcome many obstacles to succeed the business.
Yaro Mano Majok is the owner of Yaro Plaza, a five-story building located in High Cinema, a suburb of Juba. The building is home to several different rental businesses, including two restaurants, one on the ground floor and another on the fourth floor. At the fourth floor, James, a waiter, leads various menu offerings already for fare.
There is a grilled fish, steak, pepper steak, beef stroganoff. Yeah, you can get it if you order.
Once you have made your choice, you can step next door into the Juba Beef Bar. The Juba Beaver cardboard boxes are stocked with different drinks, including beer and soda. Yard's first from one small eatery to a Juba business empire was not easy.
When I started, there were no financial leasing. However, I went to the bank, and KCB actually gave me the first loan for business capital. From there on, then I started getting other loans. I paid them off, then again.
Yard says he struggled to pay back the loans with interest and ensure that the little profit she had was put to better use. She says if there had been financial entities that supported small businesses when she was getting started, that could have helped smooth the path to business success.
For the restaurant, we bought so many equipment for the restaurant. Okay, so you're putting a big chunk of your capital in this equipment instead of putting it into your business.
The team for this year's International Women History Day is Empowering Women, Empowering Humanity. Picture it. Yar's frustration and challenges are shared by many hopeful female entrepreneurs in South Sudan, but through her persistence, she has brought that picture to life. The International Financial Cooperation, or IFC, of the World Bank is trying to help more women like Yar to overcome challenges by teaching them about financial leasing, a system where beneficiaries repay funds loaned to them by making a portable installment. Yar says while financial loans for women are helpful, there are other obstacles. She says women entrepreneurs need mentors and feedback about their progress.
It is just like facilitating for you to do business. So your thing is to concentrate on doing the business, pay off your equipment, and then as you go and you grow, your business as well will grow with you.
That is why 40 female business leaders attended a one-day IFC workshop here in Juba last week. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Lucy. Soldiers from Chad and Niger have retaken the northeastern Nigerian town of Damasak from Boko Haram militants. The capture of the town on the Niger-Nigeria border is the first reported success from a joint offensive against the militants that Chad and Niger launched in Nigeria's Borno state in recent days. Chadian sources say about 10 Chadian soldiers were killed and 20 others wounded in fighting to free the town. Various sources said at least 200 Boko Haram fighters were killed, but there was no independent confirmation of the toll. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon condemned an attack yesterday on a UN base camp in northern Mali that killed three people and wounded a dozen others. The UN said the attack involved more than 30 rockets fired on the UN Peacekeeping Force compound in Kidal. Shells also struck a nearby encampment for Arab nomads where two children died. Mr. Ban said the attack is an intolerable breach of international humanitarian law. And finally, U.S. President Barack Obama says that while progress in nuclear talks with Iran has been made, gaps in the negotiating positions remain. Mr. Obama says unprecedented transparency and verification will be required for a deal. The president says if Tehran is not willing to accept such constraints, the U.S. and its negotiating partners would walk away. In a pre-recorded interview that aired yesterday on U.S. television CBS station, Mr. Obama says Iran has negotiated seriously because of what he calls some of the toughest sanctions ever put in place. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
And that's our show for this Monday. In celebration of Women's Day, we leave you with a song, I Will Enter His Gates with Thanksgiving in My Heart, sung by South Sudanese gospel artist Mary Botul.
I will enter his gate with thanksgiving in my heart. I will enter his court with praise. And I will say, this is the day that the Lord has made. I will rejoice for he has made me glad. Yes, he has made me glad. He has made me glad. I will rejoice for he has made me glad.
Say, Allah, it's I, Allah, it's cool away.
We have been listening to gospel artist Mary Batul from Upper Nile State at yesterday's Women Day celebration in Kenya, singing the song "I Will Enter His Gate with Thanksgiving in My Heart." I'm Michael Atit in Washington.
And I'm Lucy Pony, also in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.